But I'm delighted we've got everybody here today now. This is the second in our Rethinking Wales series. The IWA, obviously, for those of you who don't know us already, we're Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through policy research and advocacy, our online and print publications. Here's the current edition of the Welsh Agenda, and the next edition is out next month. Yes, next month, starts tomorrow. And they provide platforms for robust comment and debate, as well as our agenda and setting events. We're a membership organisation with members across the country and further afield, and we're funded by our members, the events we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations. This is the second in our Rethinking Wales series, and they're going to be weekly from now on, always on a Thursday at 11 o'clock. More than ever, because we're all not able yet to meet in person, it's important to bring different perspectives and experiences together and to make a really conscious effort to understand the detail of things from a different point of view. There is much that we will all need to learn to adjust to if we are all going to build a better Wales together. COVID-19 is not going away anytime soon. This is the new reality for now. So we started the series of discussions to surface what matters to most to people now in this new reality and to start to look further ahead than the immediate crisis. We continue to find it helpful to think in four different ways, noticing what's happening, what the impacts are on people's day-to-day lives and organisations, what the new policy responses are so far, what unintended negative consequences do we need to try to mitigate, and how do we start shaping the policy priorities for the future? Welsh universities generate nearly £5 billion of impact and nearly 50,000 jobs, according to Universities Wales. And they play a hugely important role in their local communities and economies in all sorts of different ways, providing spaces, incubators, providing events, and a rich cultural life for others to enjoy. I'm going to pick out three immediate issues. Obviously, there's navigating the world of teaching and learning online if we can't come together in person. Massive challenges here for us to explore today. Secondly, financial risks. How can we ensure that Welsh universities stay afloat? There were already worries about financial impact as a result of leaving the EU. This is now going to be blown out of the water by the reduction of international students as a result of COVID-19 and the possibility of young people choosing not to attend in September, plus the loss of accommodation income, conferencing and catering services. We could see 13,000 fewer first years in September, of whom over 5,000 were international, including EU students. There's also the role that universities can play in addressing big societal issues, researching vaccines, training NHS volunteers, offering testing in the community, and supporting local communities during COVID-19. Longer term issues, the importance of Welsh universities in the economy of place, jobs, cultural centres and facilities for the local area and businesses. The economy itself of students, their rent, their shopping, their volunteering, their activism. What happens to places like Aberystwyth and Bangor if higher education moves online? There's also a significant role for universities in professional development delivery for employers across Wales. And also issues around skills gaps for the economy, graduates going into jobs, the importance of apprenticeships. Now, Wales has always faced a challenge of getting students not just to study in Wales, but to remain in Wales afterwards. With the likelihood of fewer international students in future, should Wales now focus on students closer to home? Will that be better for our carbon footprint? What else needs to happen outside higher education institutions to make Wales a better place to study and stay? These are some of the issues I expect we'll cover today. What we're going to do with it? Well, as the IWA normally does, we plan to use this kind of engagement as the basis of some substantive partnership work to develop long-term policy ideas for post-COVID-19 Wales. We're delighted to have so many of you joining us today. Again, this session sold out extremely quickly, and we will be continuing this conversation online, so do please feel free to tweet using hashtag Rethinking Wales throughout the session in the next few weeks. Normal bit of housekeeping. Normally we'd be saying no to mobile phones, can you put them on silent? But actually, as you're all muted by our team, we're going to use the sidebar chat for questions. That's less of an issue. Please ask your questions to the panel through the moderator. Please use the sidebar to send the moderator a question by using the drop-down arrow so it says to moderator. Please remember that everything you write in the chat sidebar is recorded. We'll be keeping strictly to an hour, but keeping the chat room open after we finish so that you can continue to connect with each other. If you've got a fire alarm planned, if you're in an office, that shouldn't be a problem as you're on mute, but do please do what you need to do. And I do hope that you know where your fire exits and toilets are. If you need to nip and make yourself a cup of tea, totally fine. So the first two questions we're going to start with today are, what are the immediate problems that Wales faces as a result of COVID-19, with particular reference, obviously, to higher education and the economy? And then secondly, what does Wales need to be thinking about in the longer term? I'm delighted to have with us four speakers. Rob Humphreys, who's a leader and practitioner in adult education, a member of HEFCU's council, as well as a trustee of the British Council. He's here in a personal capacity today. We've got Jessica Lee Jones, who's Chief Executive Officer for Yungo Solutions. We've also got Professor Julie Lydon, who's Vice Chancellor of the University of South Wales and Chair of Universities Wales. And we've got Lynn Pamant, Controller and Auditor General for Jersey and former PwC partner in Cardiff. I'm going to ask each of the panellists to speak for 5 minutes on, in the current climate, what does Wales need to be thinking about in the longer term? And Rob, let's come to you first, please.
Good morning, one and all. Higher education is a public good. It exists to generate, disseminate, and apply new knowledge and understandings for the benefit of human society and the planet. It belongs to us all. It's an essential part of our national infrastructure. That's my starting point. If you don't like it, look away now. What kind of Wales will emerge post-COVID? It will depend to some extent on how long the crisis lasts, but we already hear worrying noises off from anchor companies such as Tata and Airbus. Our economy will be bruised, fragile, and probably contain greater inequalities. We know from Learning and Work Institute company research published earlier this week that the young, those with fewer qualifications, those in low-skill, low-wage employment, many of them women, will feel immediate brunt. Spare a thought too for this year's cohort of university graduates who may well not even have stopgap jobs to go to and will most likely be competing for jobs of any kind with next year's graduates. Much will depend on politics, and sorry to be more gloomy, the exposed nature of the Welsh economy after Brexit should be baked into our analysis. The UK government's overarching fiscal policy, its conception of the role and size of the state, will be huge determinants. The combination of post-COVID politics and a global recession could see the emergence of the lobster state, small, weak, but with a huge NHS arm. This and the UK government's industrial strategy and regional economic policy post-COVID will frame policy in Wales, whether we like it or not, as will HE policy in Wales, in England. Sorry, as will HE policy in England. The interwovenness is more complex than some suggest. The pressures and strains within the UK Union will be a longer-term driver. We have elections to the Senate next year. I merely observe that Welsh politics are more volatile than they've ever been in my lifetime. Some draw encouragement from the break with the past in 1945 to establish a new social settlement, perhaps. One might equally point to the 2008 financial crisis and how the big banks and hedge fund managers, frankly, got away with it. We should never underestimate the nature of entrenched political and economic power at UK level. Major economic and social change will require clear-sighted visions of what is possible. Higher education should have a major role in that. If I had to bet my house, I would say that immediately post-COVID, indeed sooner than that, public debate will be dominated by the need to secure economic recovery. That may well drown out much of the other stuff. There is also a role for higher education in preventing that drowning out. Separating the short from the longer term is important. Our universities face immediate financial challenges due to the loss of income from international students and a possible downturn in recruitment this autumn. These are serious matters. It means a potential weakening of our national infrastructure. It also means a huge blow to the localities in which our institutions are situated. But if, and it's a very big if, the Welsh Government is to come to their aid, it is hard to believe that there won't be, in the broadest terms, a something for something agenda. The core question then is likely to be, what is the something or something different that our government, on behalf of us as citizens, will ask of higher education? Or, and maybe we need to hear more of this, what is the something that higher education itself would put on the table in response to the new context? The risks are more than financial. It is salutary to note that if the newly discovered essential workers are to be valued, Academics are likely to find that, relatively speaking, they and their sector may be ascribed less value in the eyes of governments and the public. HE in Wales has a good story to tell, not least the per capita rate of graduate startups, the research links with anchor companies, and the progress in recent years in integrating employability into the curriculum. But if we call for a fundamental shift in society post-COVID, as many do, then it is odd to expect HE to remain unchanged. The nexus between the private sector, including SMEs, and HE is surely an area that needs renewed exploration. We may need a greater tolerance of risk in joint activity and joint ventures, coupled with a development bank type agency. Bringing HE more front and centre in policies that promote the foundational economy will be necessary. Similarly, the potential for enhanced local supply chains in Wales gives universities opportunity to contribute in terms of enhancing innovation and through their own procurement. We need to explore the nature of graduateness, the wider sets of skills and attributes that derive from a university education are as important to our future as directly vocational provision. And it's a mark of a civilised society that part of my taxes go towards research and teaching in classics, medieval history, Welsh literature and so on. However, high-level apprenticeships and lifelong learning opportunities must be brought in from the margins. The days of the standard three-year full-time degree at age 18, studied a long way from home being the default, are numbered. Following the Diamond funding reforms, there's been an upsurge in demand for part-time study at HE level. Were the provision to be even more flexible, I believe that that demand would increase. Someone is bound to raise the question of the right institutional fit for Wales. If there's to be reconfiguration, it's best left to progress organically with some constructive nurturing from government. I see no merit in a policy of institutional crash and burn to teach the others a lesson, as appears to be mooted in England. New forms of institutional linkage between some universities and further education may well be of more value in that context and can lead to a more productive institutional mission specialisation within HE. Polytechnics, anyone? Finally, at the risk of being a rather rude guest at this party, I want to challenge the singular focus on the economy when discussing higher education. Economics itself, or at least some forms of economics, is a discipline that sometimes sees little need to accommodate other methods of inquiry. Almost every academic discipline, above and beyond medical and health science, is relevant to rethinking and rebuilding our society after the present crisis. To cite just a few: education, social psychology, big data computing, philosophy, environmental science, engineering, sociology, politics, urban planning, business. But dare I say it, HE needs to show more bite here. It's interesting that our discussion this morning is convened from outside the academy. Advocacy for HE from within HE often drifts towards input, public funding, student fees and so on, rather than outcomes. It is sometimes defensive. We haven't had a public debate on the role and purpose of HE since the Haldane Commission on the University of Wales a century ago. The present minister has rightly placed great emphasis on the civic mission of universities. Despite good work in this area, carried out by all our institutions, more can be done. The cultural fissures in society laid bare, not caused, by the Brexit debate are evidence of the distance that exists between graduates and non-graduates. Civic mission should be more than a project with a voluntary group here or keeping a theatre afloat there. It is about creating and promoting a democratic impulse to do with public knowledge. The production of new knowledge and understanding that we all invest in should in the end be more than trickle-down knowledge. It needs to be proactively taken outside the walls of the academy in a systematic manner through adult education, contributions to public debate. HE is internationalist, and it must remain so. But it should also serve our own communities, our own democracy. For me, the overarching framework and disposition should be one of rooted cosmopolitanism. If we are to rethink Wales, a discussion about the economy is vital, but it's not sufficient. In the same way, the exploration of an enhanced role for higher education in the economic sphere is necessary and vital, but insufficient in capturing the power and roles of universities in Wales and the world post-COVID.
Thanks very much indeed, Rob, and thanks very much for persisting with the tech too. There's some really good challenges there. Jessica, I'm going to come to you next, please, to pick up on some of those issues, particularly around education, the economy and apprenticeships being your area of particular expertise. Jessica.
Thank you, Auriel. And thank you, Rob. That was really insightful. I think it's about to become clear who the academics are not in the room. So thank you for setting me up. So I suppose to address the immediate question, the immediate problems that Wales faces, I think there is recognition and there is a growing sense of urgency to suggest that we have to keep things moving in these troubled times. And that means that we need to find creative ways for learners to continue their studies. I think this is particularly important for FE, for HE and for apprenticeships generally, where maybe there isn't the same appetite or value in taking a blanket approach to cancelling exams as there may be for secondary school students. So this means that we require a pretty rapid approach to implementing online learning and virtual assessment. And it could mean that we need to see more collaboration between universities and training providers to leverage the existing solutions that are out there. I think we should also consider the impacts of not doing so on the wider ecosystem of training providers, including independent training providers in particular. It's not a conversation that we seem to be having in Wales at the moment, but there's certainly a lot of concerns about what the training provider landscape is going to look like as we emerge out of this and what support is going to be available for training providers during this time. I think on a more positive note, employers may want to consider the possible opportunity that they are presented with in the short term, and that is the opportunity to train employees who are on furlough. So we know that the employment landscape is inevitably going to change coming out of this crisis, probably with some permanent effects. Business models will change, the skills that are required will therefore change as well. And there are already a number of programs that exist. Google, for example, the Open University, FutureLearn, these are organizations that are offering free training, digital skills, for example, marketing. And Welsh Government may want to consider if there is going to be strategic value in investing in retraining, in a retraining or upskilling fund for furloughed employees. There's a good opportunity there. If I move on to thinking about the longer term, I suppose from an economic perspective, to address your question, I think we have to consider the future of what the labour market is going to look like. What jobs will people do? What skills will be most in demand? And how actually will people work? I think that we can all agree how educational this remote working experience has been. I'd never even heard of Zoom before we went into this crisis. And I think that is a good reminder of what we can still achieve through flexible and remote working. So that is undoubtedly going to become part of the future of work. So coming out of this crisis, I think we're going to really need to see some clear training and occupational pathways, because the world is going to be very different. And what students might be studying now, that industry may be collapsing. So they may need to look at doing something else. So we're going to need to show people visibly what their options are going to be and how they can take the skills they've got and transfer them and reapply them. And that's what's therefore going to stimulate economic recovery. From business perspective, cash is likely to be tight. There will undoubtedly be some scaling down and cutting back of workforces. And so businesses have to ask themselves the question, preferably now, how can they rebuild their business? And, to your point on apprenticeships, I truly believe that the concept of growing your own talent is going to become all the more attractive and significant in a post-COVID-19 world. And apprenticeships provide a really, really good means of achieving this. But Wales will need to make some significant investments to accelerate its higher apprenticeship programme in particular in order to leverage that.
Great. Thank you very much indeed, Jessica. So thinking about what happens next for people going through the system at the moment and about to go through the system. Julie, you've got a particular overview, obviously, haven't you, in your role as Vice Chancellor of the University of South Wales and the current Chair of Universities Wales. Can you speak to us, please, about the sorts of things that you're dealing with now and what you're seeing ahead?
Okay, like everybody, I think we're working in unprecedented times, and a lot of the analysis offered by Rob and Jessica, you know, we're all in the world of speculating as to what the future might hold. But talking about the here and now, we virtually transformed overnight from campus-based operations, albeit with a huge variety of the ways that we support learning. I think Rob's model of traditional 3 year is one that I would absolutely challenge. I think there are lots of universities, my own included, who have multiple ways that we provide support for learners and huge amount of partnerships with work-based learning providers and many others, including, of course, our substantial network of FE partners across Wales and beyond. So the here and now, they're moving to the remote world. I think the feedback we've had from our staff and students is really interesting. A high percentage of our students are actually finding it okay to good. I think that was a bit of a surprise to us because we thought they wouldn't. We did a lot of rapid work to be clear about what we could offer and how we could work with them, but also to recognise there were some bits that probably were a bit too clunky and that we needed to ask for some space to be able to develop them. So, for example, how we assess students, you know, we clearly can't do traditional exams, everybody seated in a room with invigilators walking around. And the students have been really partners in this through our students' union in particular. But in reality, we've had to phase how we move from the immediate crisis mode into and how to become the new norm of how we're operating. I think the things that are emerging now are, what is it really like for everybody working remotely? You know, how stir crazy are people going with being in the same room all day and staring at a screen? And the intensity of actually working in this way. For most of us that are doing a lot of video conference type calls, it is undoubtedly more intense than the face-to-face sort of meetings we had. And that's true for our students as well as for our staff. And also, how do those of our family, of the university community, for whom this isolating way of working is hugely challenging to their health and well-being? I'm fascinated by the varieties of ways my colleagues across the university are keeping themselves in touch, keeping themselves healthy, thinking about their communities. So today, actually, we're all giving money. We're all doing various forms of exercise, albeit it might be just a few stretches in your room as opposed to anything very substantial. But that's going to charity. So I think there's a whole variety of ways that we're dealing with the here and now. Staying with the here and now, and if I put that in the context of the here and now for universities is usually looking in the immediate, the next year ahead, we are getting to the point where we're starting to anticipate what would normally be graduation times for students. So actually year end, the rite of passage for students to celebrate with their families and friends. That is clearly not going to happen in the way that it normally does with physical engagements, all of us together in a big hall of some shape or size and everybody dressed up in funny robes to be able to celebrate the event. So I think that process of how do we look ahead in the short term is probably the most challenging first stage of looking at the recovery phase and the role that we play. So universities, as Rob has already talked about, are massive and anchors within our communities in Wales. Every community in Wales benefits from universities' impact. So 11,000 jobs are generated by Welsh universities in parts of Wales that do not actually have a physical university presence. So it's substantial. Our international activity, it's not all about students coming to Wales for studies. There are arrangements whereby we're operating in other parts of the world for every university. We are clearly part of the export earnings for the United Kingdom. And international students actually bring about £500 million of export earnings into Wales. It's too early to tell what COVID-19 will bring. The survey work of international applicants is largely positive about their expectations, a small percentage thinking they might defer. But, you know, we don't know what governments across the globe will be doing in terms of lessening, reducing the restrictions. And clearly for international students, travel restrictions are probably the biggest bar for them being able to move around the world. I also want to bring the point about international. You know, I run a university that's very much homed in the South Wales Valleys, in largely in a community where many of our home students come from similar social and cultural backgrounds. And actually our international students bring a diversity, bring a challenge in terms of thinking that we would sadly miss if we were not able to have their input into our own home-based students' experiences. I want to perhaps close this by talking about the research and innovation that we do. So a very homegrown example. The reason governments invest in research is it's very uncertain as to what the outcomes will be. It's hugely risky. And in my university, some research that was started 30 years ago is only now really coming to fruition. This is the whole work about carbon capture, about actually how can we use waste for energy going forward. I mean, that's been a 30-year programme. And I suspect my colleagues who started that work 30 years ago, actually a married couple working in the university, would never have imagined that 30 years later we still wouldn't have fully realised the benefit of their research. And clearly at the moment, much of our efforts has gone towards the post, you know, managing the COVID-19 challenge and going ahead. Can I perhaps close with just a very longer term view? Mm-hmm. I don't mean this to sound complacent, but universities have been around for hundreds and thousands of years, and one of the things universities do is adapt. So I'm confident we will find ways of adapting. I recognise and am living with a huge amount of financial challenge looking ahead to potentially lose the students, and the income that students bring for next year is massive. And that's why we're collaboratively working across the sector. This is a shared endeavour by universities across the whole of the United Kingdom, shared with governments. I mean, I've been really impressed with the response of government ministers to the dialogue. We now need to move to action in terms of consideration of how that stability will be maintained in an environment that's very unpredictable. So for the very long term, I see universities continuing to be major players in our lives in Wales. Part of, I think, developing healing, Rob's again raised the question of post-Brexit and the work that we do. And I, as part of my graduation speeches, often talk about our fundamental role as universities is about producing a generation of individuals who are intelligent citizens and will play their full life, you know, full role in public life, and actually will not be frightened to use evidence as the base to challenge and to change thinking. And long may that continue.
Great. Thank you very much indeed, Julie. So a whole heap of issues coming up there. Lynn, I'm going to come to you finally before we take some of the questions from everybody who's here online. Can you talk to us, please, about what you see as the challenges for further ahead?
So I'm going to start with a reminder, I guess, about the state of the higher education sector before the outbreak, because this was not necessarily a sector that was absolutely thriving. It had real challenges in terms of financial stability before this crisis broke out, challenging student demographics, increasing operational costs, particularly staff costs, and challenges around the traditional income routes. So this was a sector that was under some challenge. And when I look at some analysis that PwC did around the top risks facing HE institutions prior to the outbreak, three of the five top risks are around student recruitment. We have a sector in Wales where a lot of income that goes into higher education in Wales is still based on a traditional teaching model. So student recruitment, a significant risk. And clearly, as we've already heard from some of the other speakers, that risk gets exacerbated. On the upside, though, the Welsh university sector, in terms of research, really does punch above its weight in terms of the transformational impact of the research that's undertaken. And in fact, Welsh universities do better than the UK average in terms of impact of the research that they undertake. So some sort of promising signs in terms of what could be done if more money was invested in research in Welsh institutions compared perhaps to some other UK institutions. But I guess what does strike me is that in a short-term environment of real financial challenge, there is a real need for universities to move quickly to take preemptive action now to reduce their cost bases. And that will in itself have an impact in the economies in which they operate, because Welsh universities will not be able to survive without doing something about their cost base in an environment where income will be reduced in the short to medium term. Having said all of that, when you look at recessions and you look at past history of recessions and, you know, going back to depressions as well, generally at times of economic crisis, the education sector by and large doesn't do too badly. It doesn't tend to do as bad as the worst sectors in an economic crisis. Why is that? Because often people turn to the education sector to improve their skills during a downturn. And again, the latest economic outlook that came out of PwC in the last couple of weeks shows that whilst you look at the doom and gloom forecasts of how much the economy is going to shrink, you look at the OBR forecasts, you're talking a 20%+ shrinkage in the economy. Generally, the PwC outlook was a bit more positive. It was only a 6-11% shrinkage in the economy. But when you then look at the education sector, they were only forecasting a 2-3% shrinkage. So the education sector, by and large, tends to do slightly better than the UK as a whole. So actually, how do we make the most of that? And I guess a couple of observations about making the most of that. I said something about research already, and I think when Rob, I think it was speaking about actually if investment's going to be made by government in terms of investing to come out of economic crisis, what are higher education going to offer in return? The something for something. And we know that governments do invest when looking to come out of economic crises through fiscal stimulus, through capital expenditure programs and the like. So there's something that HE could give back. Well, research is a good investment. And how do we make the most of investment by government in research going forward? And how do we get Welsh institutions to think about that? Second observation is around the industrial base of the UK. One thing that this crisis is teaching us is that we have really decimated our industrial base, and our supply chain for getting essential supplies to the front line at the moment has been really, really challenging. So if the UK comes out of this revisiting what its industrial base should look like, what role should universities play in terms of that industrial base for the future? And then my final observation is international students have been talked about on this call. And I guess we ought to think about how are we going to come out of this crisis? And actually, globally coming out of these crises, if East Asia and China come out of the crises first, then you could see a shift in global economic power going further east. How do we position ourselves if there is a change in economic power towards China and East Asia going forward? And a lot of the international student base were coming from that geographic region. And I think one observation in that is that we all sit here and perceive, well, actually, international students won't come anymore because of travel restrictions. But as we've already heard, there has been already a shift towards online provision. And I think we do have to remind ourselves about why did international students come to the UK in the first place? It's because they want a UK brand on their degree certificate. And we shouldn't lose sight of that UK brand or that Welsh brand in terms of its attractiveness to international students. We need to think about how we deliver that differently, but we shouldn't give up on the international angle.
Great. Thank you very much indeed, Lynn. So there's three good things for us to think about. I was reading the Wonky newsletter at the beginning of the week, like I always do, and there was an interesting chunk on things being, you know, largely under control for now, but obviously September and what happens in September being a key turning point. And I think you alluded to some of that, Lynn, at the end in terms of the UK brand on degree certificates. So they were talking about a big debate on adequacy, is, you know, one thing around emergency adaptations to the situation now, but adequacy in relation to both teaching and assessment. And some of the compromises now may be harder to justify further on down the line in terms of charging from that point of view. So I think there's a question, an open question to you all, which is, what does Welsh Government need to do more of to get the sector through the financial storm? What exactly would be useful from that perspective? Julie, could I come to you first on that, please, and then Rob?
Thank you. So perhaps I'll start with the, I think, governments. I think this is a UK-wide challenge. So the first ask I would put on the table is that party politics are put on one side, and that actually we coalesce around an agenda which is accepting there needs to be change in higher education, accepting that you would expect us to do things for ourselves as well. Sorry, so I think the points have already made, actually the collective effort to protect what is an incredibly important asset for the United Kingdom as we go into a recovery phase. So I think that would be my first ask. The second ask is actually, I think, a programme of investment. I think we do need a programme of investment. Lynn's referred to, obviously, to our research base. That is one that actually it pays back well. And universities in the world, for every pound that's invested, the economy gets more than £6 back. So at the moment, there is no evidence that that sort of dynamic of investment value has fundamentally changed. So those are the two asks I'll put on the table at this point.
Great, thank you. Rob?
I wouldn't demur from what Julie said. I prefer back to what I said in my opening remarks, that there's great opportunity in Wales because of the small scale for a partnership approach. And I'm sure the government will want to see a partnership approach with the higher education sector. But I do think the HE sector has to articulate and find a tone in which it is producing effectively a new or modified offer in terms of the broader public policy, not offer of provision particularly, the broader public policy agenda. Because if we assume that things are going to change dramatically post-COVID, economically, perhaps socially and culturally as well, higher education won't be the same. It remains the same in the sense of being vital, but its form won't necessarily be the same. And I think HE itself risks sometimes presenting with asks all the time, rather than politically, in the political arena, rather than presenting with a solution. They've got so many, many solutions to provide, but we need to find a different kind of language when engaging with government and the wider public. I know people picked up my point earlier on about if essential workers, in my view, rightly, are given greater value morally, but also in real terms, it may be that the public ascribe less value to higher education. That's a big risk for us.
Great. So I'm going to take some questions that have come up through the chat. So we've talked about the need for greater investment here. What sort of additional R&D opportunities for Wales might come as a result of COVID-19 is one question. And the other one is, pre-COVID, the talk was of levelling up and spreading R&D away from the Golden Triangle to the rest of the UK. And as the focus switches from sharing prosperity to sharing recovery, how do we make sure that we don't lose sight of that particular aim? Jessica, could I come to you and then Lynn, please, for R&D opportunities, particularly now?
Sure. Well, I think that the thing that I would really like to see as we, you know, enter into economic recovery is a coordinated approach and a focus on inclusivity. And I mean that in all aspects of the word. I mean it in terms of inclusivity for teaching and learning opportunities. You know, there's some interesting comments coming through from Geraint in the chat box there about, will a long-term shift to more online learning create a sense of a transactional relationship? Well, I suppose it could, but I think there's also an opportunity in there to be more inclusive and to engage with more parts of society and more parts of the economy to really sort of promote that lifelong learning. And I think that's the same in R&D. There are many companies who have private R&D functions. There are, you know, lots of Welsh government funded projects, EU funded projects, UK funded projects to do more collaboration between universities, between HE and industry. And I would like to see more of that. I think that is where we get the, you know, where UK universities are known for producing high quality, excellent academic research. I think there is real benefit coming out of this in putting our heads together to translate more of that academic research into actual applied commercial opportunity. So I think we need a coordinated approach to do that.
Okay. That takes time and that takes effort too, doesn't it? Lynn?
Yeah, a couple of observations on the research side of things. If you just sit back and think about where a government going to want to invest in research right now, and I guess the biggest area of research that's going on globally right now is to find a vaccination to and a solution to the COVID-19 problem. And I think going forwards, there will continue to be no shortage of investment in science and in medicine related topics. One of the frustrations that the globe is seeing at the moment is how long it's taking for research to get up and running, how quickly you can move from pure research through the various stages to get a vaccination on the market. And we're doing that in a very here and now way, but actually what we are seeing right now is the pandemic has affected us from a health perspective and an economic perspective. This is COVID-19, what happens on COVID-20, 21 and beyond. So I think there will be a continued investment in science, tough area, pure science, and actually the whole sort of pandemic and virus related topics. So where do Welsh institutions stand in terms of that? I think the other observation is, as governments invest to come out of crises, what are the areas that, what will the lessons learned from this? So there's going to be a whole host of research opportunities in terms of what this pandemic has meant. But I think coming back to the point I made earlier in terms of the UK industrial base and what is the right investment and research in that going forwards as well, and actually what is the right answer in terms of the balance of sectors in our economy. So I think, again, that's an area that Welsh institutions should think about. And we've seen some really good work done around that. The final area for me, and this is an area where I'm sure Julie will sort of comment on this one, is actually when you look at how everything has moved online, the whole area around cybersecurity and investment in more robust cybersecurity. We're all sitting here using Zoom for this conversation, and yet we know that Zoom itself has some increased cyber risk compared to other platforms. So continued investment in research research and development around the cybersecurity space and around doing online better, more secure and safely, those are areas that government will want to invest in, and we ought to have answers from an HE perspective of what the contribution is there.
Julie, just picking up on that cybersecurity point, please, given USW's expertise.
Yeah, can I wind it perhaps to digital as well as just cybersecurity?
Yeah, sure.
So one of the things Wales has is a considerable track record in terms of that digital. So obviously our wafer production, the semiconductor work that we've been doing.
Yep.
So I expect and hope that the government will still recognise the significance of that area, and it's thinking about the longer term for the economy. Coming to cybersecurity, data attacks, vulnerability is considerable. And we're seeing, actually, the business inquiries coming into us at the moment are twofold. One, how do I work in a remote fashion? And that's everything from how do I keep my employees healthy and sane, right the way through to actually how do I protect myself in cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is a whole space around, I suppose, a better understanding of digital risks and opportunities, including the cybersecurity one. So the universities in the United Kingdom have been on heightened alert to cyber attacks. In fact, two universities had a weekend where they had difficulty operating. So at the moment, that has been is an area of work that we continue to do. We're continuing to doing the secret research for various agencies around the world so that they have a better understanding of that. But looking ahead, coming back to Lynn's last point, I think we need collectively, as a partnership in Wales, to recognise the areas that will endure. So, you know, the question of energy and climate, whole streams of involved on that. The cyber world and digital world we just talked about, I get whole streams on that. And then the third one I'd like to put on the table is Wales as a community. There are bits that we've really maintained. I think the social conscience of the Welsh public life is probably stronger than you find in some other parts of the United Kingdom. I think one of the challenges is the decimation of public health in England has been challenging, whereas Wales maintained a really strong public health arm. So I would hope that we'll continue to invest both in terms of how we do things, so how it works, but actually in ensuring that we collectively, whether we're government, whether we're industry, whether we're universities, whether we're individuals in our society, actually recognise that the sum of the parts is worth more than the parts themselves.
Thank you. So I want to pick up on some of those issues, particularly around retraining and reskilling and opportunities now, obviously, through furlough. So there's a note from Kerith at the Open University about mentioning their work with furloughs workers and working with Working Wales to make open learn courses freely available to workers on furlough across Wales. And Jessica's point being critical about people being able to increasingly need to access more flexible learning opportunities. And if we're thinking about what the point of the economy is as well, it's not that it should exist in its current form and we should be aiming to get back to what it was before all of this started. There are key issues, and we're thinking also about the manufacturing base, and we're thinking about communities across Wales and the role of universities in those communities. How do you think that both government and providers can help identify the areas of the economy, this future economy, that businesses are going to need employees to upskill and reskill? Digital, obviously, going to be one of those areas. We know that already, and that's happening very rapidly. But from a business's perspective, how can governments help nurture this as well? So can we pick up on some of that? We're going, what do we value? How do we value it? How do we invest in it? And what are universities and government's role together in enabling that investment? Rob, I'm going to come to you first, and then I'm going to come to Jessica.
So I think Julie made some very helpful points about continuing enhancing the links, Lynn, to actually between key growth sectors, semiconductors and so on. Those must remain, we must enhance those links. Although I think anyone in HE would say that identifying the sweet spot in terms of working closely, collaborating, and particularly with the research and knowledge transfer with industry is notoriously difficult. You know, it's one of those problems that we're always seeking to solve, and it'll never be solved entirely, because the idea of picking winners, you know, to use that cliche, governments find that extraordinarily difficult as well. So it's really a question of implementing a set of capacities and systems within higher education which allows it to respond quickly, allows it to be fleet of foot, allows it to interact. And that goes back to my point about perhaps we have to have some kind of greater tolerance of risk in that kind of nexus between industry and employers and higher education. And post-COVID, we're likely to see, I think, workers becoming more reliant on SMEs, micro businesses for that matter. And we need to explore again how universities, how higher education can help in that particular area. Second point I'd make, Oriel, in response to the wider application of research, we do need to keep a focus on something which is beyond simply transactional economics. Obviously, the economy is critical in terms of generating income to raise tax revenue and so on for public services. We need to take that as read. But what COVID has exposed is that there are central questions about the way we live, you know, the amount or not of social capital, how cities are planned, the importance of transport, you know, how people value less traffic on our streets. So these other dimensions around, say, urban planning, the fate of the high street, social psychology, you know, how we want to interact with each other. These are proper and legitimate areas of research which universities should now be bringing to the table, and government should be seeking to stimulate research in those areas, because we have an opportunity now to deploy that kind of research in creating something new, different, and most of all, better.
Thank you. Before I come to you, Jessica, I'm just going to say thank you very much indeed to Julie, who I know has to go. So really appreciate you taking part in this. We're running slightly over. I'm going to carry on and take one more question, and then we're going to wrap up because we started 10 minutes late. Jessica.
Yeah, so I think, as has already been mentioned, we know our strengths in Wales. We've got, you know, good provision and good strength in depth in areas such as cybersecurity, in areas such as semiconductors. And I don't think that is going to change fundamentally coming out of COVID-19, but we certainly need to reposition ourselves within that and look at, you know, what are going to be the key challenges for those particular sectors as we come out of this. So I think there needs to be a piece of work to map those specific future skills requirements. I think that is necessary for industry, but I think it's also necessary for the next generation of learner coming out of the system. And also, as we've said, those workers that may be displaced by the current disruption caused by COVID-19. So I think there's possibly a role for apprenticeships within this, and possibly a role for the Wales Apprenticeship Advisory Board specifically to look at those skills mapping requirements. And I think where we need to get to coming out of this, and I think this will help all stakeholders, is to create those fluid pathways, you know, right from school leaver right up to doctorate level if we need to. We need to join up further education with higher education and everything else across the board, with employers, with everybody. We need a coordinated approach to this. But I do think the first step is to actually make a conscious effort to map those future skills requirements, because there are going to be changes.
Thank you. I'm going to, it's 12:05, I'm going to start wrapping us up now. It's always tricky trying to pull together the threads that come from conversations like this. And there's a huge load of stuff coming through from the chat sidebar. I'm going to take what I think are the threads coming through. While I do that, I'm going to come back after that to ask the panelists, what's the one thing you're going to take away from today's conversation that either from each other or from the chat sidebar? So that gives you a minute to reflect on that. So some issues here around a massive cultural shift for us all, I think, is the underpinning thing of how we live our lives, what matters, and what we have noticed as a result of the last 6 weeks in particular. And that is going to continue. So some of the issues that Rob was picking up there in particular recently, what that then means for universities in the future, and what that means for them in terms of their role, in terms of their finances, in terms of their connections and partnerships, in terms of their research, their R&D investments, where that money is coming from to enable that to happen, but also their connections with local communities and learners, most importantly of all. One of the three themes coming through from today's conversation was also both about opportunities that might come through, and also these massive risks, and a greater tolerance of those risks, I think, coming through too. Lynn's points around the industrial base of the UK and Wales's role in that, I think, is another one that I think we should be picking up on. I think the shift in terms of global power, that's been there for a while. We've been seeing that for a long while. But there is still something which is uniquely saleable as Wales, obviously, and also as Wales's role within the UK. I think there's some challenges in terms of coordination, and it will always be difficult, and it remains difficult, to deliver on the day job immediately now and then also do that shifting to what happens next. Well, we don't know what that is, but I think Julie's point around universities have been around for a long time and will continue to adapt like all good strong organizations is a fair and a valid one, as is Lynn's around the challenges that already exist. And I think, you know, there was a question that we didn't get to in terms of pay, gender, and BAME pay gaps and precarious employment practices within universities and workloads that I think are part of that issue in terms of sustainability of universities. So we're talking about a systemic change that is upon us now. I'm going to come back to you each, please, for one thing to take away to either think about more or, what would you take away from this conversation? Lynn?
So my takeaway from this conversation is that we continue to sort of debate incremental change. I think we need to give more thought and time to the conversation of the Wales of tomorrow, 5 years' time. What does it look like? And then how do we envisage that? And then what's the wise investments now along the way that help us get there?
And there's a challenge there in getting some consensus around that too, obviously. Yeah. Rob?
Can I do 1.5 points? My point, because nobody's discussed it really. I think there's an element of relief and euphoria about the move to online learning. I think there are major challenges down the track there, not least around tuition fees and whether students will wish to pay $9,000 for an online learning experience when one of the global leaders in that area, the Open University, charges considerably less than that and has 50 years experience. In terms of the overarching takeaway from today, the way we are boxed in by the UK government's fiscal policy will be an absolute key determinant, including its regional policy, it seems to me. So we have to think smart as a sector and government together, and with the further education sector for that matter, in terms of shifting things. Universities have been around for many hundreds of years, but the present shape of the sector in Wales has been around for a very short time. Somebody from 1950 would recognise the shape of the HE sector in Wales today. So there is no there's not a pre-given situation. Things probably will have to change considerably in the form of provision offered, provided, work with employers and so on, but possibly institutionally as well.
Great, thank you very much. Jessica?
So I suppose the thing that I'm reflecting on from this conversation is that one of the few positives to come out of coronavirus is that we have this new common ground. You know, there is probably nobody that has not been affected by coronavirus in some way, shape or form. And who knows what this may lead to. I mean, just by having this conversation today in the format that we have, you know, I have learned more through this chat box than I probably have all week about what the initiatives are that are going on in Wales. So I think hopefully we will take some of these things forward into the post-COVID-19 era. But more than that, I think the fact that so many people 66 participants at one point. The fact that so many of us have come to the table today to shape Wales's recovery and to shape, you know, the future of Wales makes me really, really optimistic for what we've got coming.
That's a good note to end on. Thank you very much indeed to all our panellists, Rob Humphreys, Jessica Lee Jones, Professor Julie Lydon and Lynn Pamant. If you want to receive early notifications of future IWA events and recording of all our Rethinking Wales sessions, do please join us as a member at iwa.wales about us, support us. Next week, we are focusing particularly on what kind of economy do we want for the future of Wales. We've got panellists from WWF, the World Wildlife Federation, Planet, the development organisation in Pembrokeshire, Professor Jerry Holtham and Debbie Green, the Chief Exec of Coastal Housing in Swansea. As a member of the IWA, you get fantastic benefits, but you can also play your own part in supporting an open, politically independent organisation at a really crucial juncture for Wales, helping us have these conversations about the issues that matter now and the issues that will matter in the future. We're going to continue to leave the chat discussion open again for a little while longer in case there are any other thoughts and comments coming through. And the chat will be available to everybody with the recording of this session online afterwards. Thank you very much.